Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're asking you to think about something kind of strange, a real paradox. How the end of World War II, this huge, devastating conflict, didn't actually lead to peace.
Right. It's counterintuitive, isn't it?
It really is. Instead, it almost immediately set the stage for a totally different kind of global standoff. Not fought with, you know, direct battles between the big powers, but in other ways.
Exactly. And that's our mission for this deep dive, to really explore the roots of the Cold War. How did the end of World War II in 1945 directly feed into this new conflict emerging in Europe and also in Asia?
That's the core of it, yeah. You had these two major allies, the U.S. and the Soviet Union. They fought together against a common enemy.
A truly horrific enemy.
Absolutely. And yet, almost the moment the war ended, they became, well, deeply antagonistic. Was it just their political systems? Capitalism versus communism? Was it just that?
Well, that was a huge part of it. Their visions for the post-war world were fundamentally incompatible.
Which made real cooperation basically impossible, didn't it?
Pretty much. And that led to this very unique conflict, the Cold War. Call that precisely because the U.S. and Soviets avoided direct, all-out war with each other.
Okay, so let's try and unravel how that shift happened. It's fascinating because the cracks started appearing even before the war was officially over.
That's right. Even while they were fighting together, the U.S.-Soviet relationship was already fraying, remember? But both were sort of reluctantly dragged into the war, weren't they, around 41, 42, after attacks by Germany and Japan.
And their contributions were obviously massive, crucial to winning.
No question.
You think about the American side, the sheer industrial power. The U.S. auto industry, for example, pumping out millions of trucks, tanks, vehicles.
An incredible feat. And that industrial might wasn't just about winning battles. It signaled a kind of economic power that, you know, the Soviets definitely noticed for the post-war era.
Sure. And on the Soviet side, pivotal victories like Stalingrad in 1943, a brutal turning point.
Absolutely. And then in the Pacific, you had the U.S. code-breaking successes in 42. That really changed the game against Japan,
yeah,
allowing for that island-hopping strategy towards like Iwo Jima and Okinawa.
Yeah, and the Japanese response, the kamikazes, just showed how desperate and determined the fighting was.
Reinforcing the sense of a fight to the bitter end.
Which then brings us to the atomic bomb. August 1945, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, over 200,000 people killed. A devastating end to the war, but also something else.
Something else entirely. Because just 2 days after the first bomb, the Soviet Union declares war on Japan.
Right. And Japan surrenders shortly after. Was that Soviet declaration just, you know, a final push? Or was it more about positioning for what came next?
Oh, it was absolutely strategic. The A-bombs, they weren't just a weapon. They were a message. A terrifying display of American power aimed, perhaps implicitly, at Moscow, too.
Hmm.
So Stalin's declaration against Japan, that was about grabbing a seat at the table in post-war Asia, projecting Soviet strength even as this new American power dominated the headlines.
So those images we see, U.S. and Soviet soldiers celebrating together, shaking hands.
That was real, on the ground. But behind the scenes, the alliance was already falling apart. Suspicion, different goals.
Which loops back to that core ideological rift you mentioned, American capitalism versus Soviet communism. How did that sort of abstract difference become concrete conflict after the war?
Well, nowhere was it more immediate than in Europe, specifically Germany.
Yes, divided Germany.
Exactly. After the war, Germany was split into four zones, U.S., Soviet, British, French. And Berlin, the capital, deep inside the Soviet zone, was also divided the same way.
A recipe for tension right there.
Absolutely. And it didn't take long. The U.S., Britain and France decided to merge their zones into what would become West Germany.
And the Soviets saw that as a direct challenge.
Completely. Their response was the Berlin blockade. They cut off all roads, railways, canals, all land and water access between West Germany and West Berlin.
Trying to force the Western allies out.
Precisely. A real power play, showing just how fast things had turned sour. And it's kind of ironic, right? Because around this same time, these same powers were creating the United Nations.
The UN, yeah. Aimed at world peace cooperation.
Supposedly. But the structure itself showed the mistrust. A key rule. The big five, US, USSR, Britain, France, China, all had to agree on major actions. The veto power.
Which meant?
Well, it meant that if any one of them didn't like something, especially the US or the Soviets, they could just block it.
So the UN was often gridlocked on Cold War issues from the start.
Pretty much hamstrung, yeah. It became another stage for the ideological fight, rather than a place to solve it easily.
Okay, that makes sense. And this distrust was playing out elsewhere too, right? with the Soviets setting up governments in Eastern Europe.
Yes. Stalin insisted on installing friendly governments, which, let's be clear, meant communist-controlled in places like Poland, Hungary, Bulgaria. They were already in power in Albania, Yugoslavia.
Securing their borders from their perspective?
That was the justification. But from the U.S. and British viewpoint, this looked like expansion, imposing communism.
And they couldn't really stop it at that point.
Not without risking major conflict, which no one wanted right after World War II. So it happened, deepening the divide, and by 1947, the lines were drawn very clearly.
Enter the Truman Doctrine.
Exactly. President Truman basically came out and said the world was divided. Free nations, meaning democracies, and enslaved nations under communism.
So not just words, but a policy statement, especially regarding places like Greece and Turkey.
It was absolutely a policy statement. It formalized the idea of containment. America was stepping away from isolationism, committing to support nations resisting communist pressure. Greece and Turkey were the immediate focus, seen as vital strategically.
A clear line in the sand.
A very clear line. The U.S. would actively push back against Soviet influence.
And then came the economic muscle to back it up, the Marshall Plan.
Right. Billions of dollars to rebuild Western Europe.
On the surface, humanitarian aid. But the deeper Cold War angle.
Oh, definitely. Rebuild with capitalism. Stabilize those economies, make them strong, prosperous, and therefore less tempting targets for communism. It was about preventing Soviet expansion economically.
An economic bulwark.
That's a good way to put it. And the Soviets, they were actually invited, scheduled to be included initially.
But they refused.
They rejected it, saw it as American interference, capitalist imperialism, basically. And they countered with their own plan, COMECON, the Council for Mutual Economic Assistance, to tie the Eastern Bloc economies together under their influence.
So you had two economic blocs forming, and then the military alliances followed.
Yes, that was the next logical, if worrying, step. The U.S. led the way with NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, in 1949.
Officially for collective defense, maintaining peace.
That was the stated aim. But everyone knew it was primarily aimed at deterring the Soviet Union, a military alliance prepared for potential confrontation.
And the Soviet response.
Came a bit later, after West Germany joined NATO. The Soviets formed the Warsaw Pact in 1955, a military alliance of their Eastern European allies.
So now you have two heavily armed military blocs facing each other across Europe.
Exactly. NATO versus the Warsaw Pact. This massively ramped up the arms race, the tension, the militarization of the Cold War.
Okay, so Europe is clearly the main stage initially, but things were heating up in Asia too, weren't they?
Absolutely. The end of WWII didn't bring peace there either. The Chinese Civil War, which had been paused to fight Japan, flared right back up.
And the outcome was huge.
Monumental. By 1949, Mao Zedong's communists had won. Jiang Zemin's nationalists fled to Taiwan. Mao proclaims the People's Republic of China.
A communist victory in the world's most populous country. How did Moscow react?
They were delighted. Suddenly they had this massive, powerful socialist ally. It completely shifted the geopolitical balance.
So Moscow and Beijing become close.
Very close, especially through the 1950s. They had a shared ideology, but also shared fears.
Fears of what? Or who?
Primarily the United States. They saw the U.S. as actively trying to contain and undermine communism globally, and particularly in Asia.
What specific U.S. actions worried them?
Things like the U.S. rebuilding Japan, their former enemy, turning it into a democratic capitalist ally right on their doorstep.
Okay.
And the U.S. forming military alliances with South Korea, with Taiwan, where the nationalists had fled. Moscow and Beijing saw this as encirclement, as the U.S. propping up anti-communist forces all around them.
They blamed the U.S. for fostering these anti-communist groups.
Yes, they perceived it as an offensive strategy by Washington.
And then, almost immediately after the communist victory in China, war breaks out in Korea, 1950.
Another flashpoint. Korea, like Germany, had been divided after WWII. Soviet influence in the north, U.S. influence in the south.
A temporary division that became permanent.
And ideological. When North Korea invaded South Korea in 1950, it wasn't just seen as a civil war.
It was seen as a communist bloc move backed by the Soviets and Chinese.
Exactly. Which is why the UN, led mainly by the U.S., intervened to defend the South.
Leading to years of brutal fighting.
Very heavy fighting, yeah. Until the ceasefire in 1953. Korea became the first major hot war of the Cold War era fought by proxies, but with the superpowers deeply involved behind the scenes.
It really crystallizes the whole thing, doesn't it? The post-WWII world wasn't about peace. It was the birth of this totally new kind of conflict.
Defined by ideology, by maneuvering, proxy wars.
Yeah.
Not direct superpower combat, thankfully, but constant tension.
And the events in Europe and Asia, they weren't separate things. They were both symptoms of that same deep divide, capitalism versus communism.
Absolutely intertwined. The suspicion born during the war just bloomed into this global struggle.
So as we wrap up, here's something to think about. We still see tensions today, don't we? With Russia, the successor to the Soviet Union, we still hear echoes of those ideological clashes. And globally, you still have deep divides between different political and economic viewpoints.
Mm. The legacy is certainly there.
So what can, looking back at how the Cold War started, how these dynamics played out back then, teach us now about managing ideological differences, about global stability, and maybe most critically, about avoiding conflict in a world that still feels pretty divided?